I'd like to introduce, or reintroduce, I should say, our guest, Dr. Glenn Berger. To review, Glenn has a psychotherapy practice in New York City. Lots of work there, I hear. I'm kidding. I'm guessing there's work everywhere. And he has a book coming out soon about finding our true selves. You can check our blog for his blog to find out more. And he's just so darn well adjusted, I can't resist speaking with him. So, Glenn, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thanks for having me, Michael.
How would you define empathy?
Empathy is the ability to walk in somebody else's emotional shoes. It's the ability to feel what somebody else is feeling.
And that's important.
And that's central. What they actually understand now is that there are empathy neurons, and that when two people are in that kind of emotional resonance, that it actually fosters the growth of neurons in the brain. And it helps you learn. It helps you be more relaxed and responsive to what's happening in the environment. It helps you get in touch with your own sense of empathy. So, for example, if a person says to another one, I'm really sorry that I did that. I understand that that must have really hurt your feelings. It's much easier for the other person at that point to say, you know what? I have to take responsibility for my part, and I'm sorry too. Now, if the first person says, I don't know why you did that. You shouldn't have done that. You were bad. The other person's going to respond with a negative response. So when we get an empathetic response, it frees us up to be empathetic ourselves. And that's the way people connect.
Why are intimate relationships so important?
We have to go back to the work of a scientist named Conrad Lorenz. He was an ethologist, and he observed animals in nature. And what he observed was that when a duckling was born, that the duckling would follow the first thing that it saw move. Now, in nature, that should be the mama duck. And when that infant saw the mom walk, he would follow it and follow that duck forever. Now, if the first thing that that duckling saw walk was a wind-up doll or Conrad Lorenz, it would always follow that thing. And what Conrad Lorenz did was he named this attachment, that infants at a particular moment in their early life, they attach to their caregiver. Now, human beings attach as well. It's just far more complicated than duck. And these attachments are singularly important in our lives because they have everything to do with our survival. Of course, this is the infant's first experience of love. And when a child looks at their mom and sees their mom gazing at them with love, and they gaze back at their mother with love, this actually releases chemicals in the body that produce euphoria. It releases endorphins, and there are other chemicals as well that make us feel good. So obviously it's built into our system to gaze at each other with love and to connect and feel good about that. And since we have a good feeling when we do that, we want to do that more. And this is what develops that attachment. Obviously, in order for the species to continue, then people have to propagate. And so that attachment develops and grows so that we develop intimate relationships in our adult lives. And we may not understand exactly what those intimate relationships are from a scientific point of view. But we certainly know, and one thing that I can say with absolute certainty, is that for the vast majority of humanity, intimate relationships is the most important thing in life.
There are so many different kinds of love. There are different ways we feel loved. How would you define it?
I turn to the work of a great psychologist named Eric Fromm, who wrote a book called The Art of Loving. And in that book, Fromm says that love is not a feeling, but it is an action. It's a choice. Love is the choice to put somebody else's welfare equal to or ahead of our own, to think of somebody else's feelings, to think of their needs, to think about who they are and what they want, and to put those needs and wants and desires at a place that just as important as our own is. And it's choosing to do that every moment of every day. That's what love is.
Well, it seems some people look all their lives and never find it. How does one find love?
That is one of the most mysterious questions, and one of the things that I explore all the time. Why is it that some people seem to be able to find love so easily and form connections so readily, and other people don't seem to do so? Now, I think that there are three basic possible answers to that question that people bring into my room, and I think these are the three kind of obvious possibilities. One is that there's something fundamentally wrong with me, and that's why I can't find love. Another possibility is that it's luck, that some people are just lucky they meet the right person and some people don't find the right person. Now, neither of those possibilities are very hopeful to me, because if you're just permanently broken and that means you'll never find love, well, we might as well just kind of go out and have a drink and cry into it. If it's all luck, well, there's nothing that we can do about that. It's either going to happen or it's not going to happen. And I don't like that option, because I like to feel like I have a little more control over my own life. So what's a third possibility? The third possibility is that if we can't find love, maybe it means that in some way we have learned that we don't deserve love. Maybe in some way, because of our upbringing, we have not gained the skills to form those attachments, and we can learn how to do that. And if it means that in some way we have shame, which is the belief that there's something wrong with me, it's the feeling that goes along with the belief that there's something wrong with me, and part of that belief is I'm not lovable, well, we can heal from that. And if we can heal from that, then we can open ourselves up to the possibility that there is love for us. And when we do that, we have a much greater likelihood of finding it.
Sometimes when we found love, or we think we found it, it can slip away. What can we do to prevent that? Or should we prevent that?
One of the other great mysteries are the people who come to me and say, wow, I was so excited by my partner in the beginning of our relationship. We had such closeness. We were so turned on by each other. And now I'm bored, or now I'm not interested in them anymore. I'm not attracted to them anymore. What happened? This is a great mystery. And I think that there's a couple of answers to this question. One is, in contemporary life, there are a few things that are as frightening and as dangerous as intimate relationships. Of course, this fulfills humankind's deepest need, but at the same time, it's terrifying to most of us. Why is that? Because if we give ourselves to somebody in that way, they can hurt us. They can withdraw their love from us. And we imagine that that would be devastating, and it very often is when that happens. So to give our heart to somebody is a very, very dangerous thing to do. Now, if we have experienced those kinds of hurts in our life, we are very likely to protect ourselves. So when we feel our hearts opening, we close them because we fear that hurt. So somebody gets into a relationship in the beginning, it's very exciting. There's not as much risk in the beginning. But as you get closer and closer to somebody and closer to achieving true, authentic intimacy, that risk may lead the person to actually withdraw without realizing it. And these are people who are afraid of commitment or who shut down from commitment. Another thing is that we have this fantasy that once we find somebody that we love, that, well, then my work is done. And this is where we get back to that meaning that Eric Fromm talked about with love. Love is a commitment to work on a relationship over the course of time or over the course of a lifetime. We have an expectation that we should always feel the same way, but that's not the way it is. We have to cultivate that passion every day with our partners. And if we don't, it'll probably go away.
Mm. Well, is there only one chance for love? I mean, can we find it again if it's been lost?
I think that another fantasy that people have is that they have one soulmate in the world. And every person who's single, they're going to go out on a date and they think, oh, is this person going to be the one? The truth is, of course, is that most people that we encounter, we're not going to have an intimate relationship with. And it is rather rare to find somebody that you can form that kind of bond and connection with. But certainly, it's not only one person. We have endless examples of people who fall in love many times in their lives. And we can, if we have an open heart, we have the possibility of finding love more than one time in our life. In terms of human life and our day-to-day worlds, most people would say that love of their intimate partner, love of their children, are probably the most important things to them. They create an opportunity for us to grasp the true nature of the universe, that the universe is love. It has been said that God is love. That's one way of putting it. And if we can experience the quality of love that we have with our intimate partner or for our children, then I believe we are tapping into the essence of all things. That's the great gift of love, is that we come to know the nature of things fundamentally. So I suppose the highest love, if there is such a thing, is that universal love. It's that experience of a oneness with all of nature, with everything. And that begins at our birth. It continues through our intimate relationships. It continues in our love of our children and continues to expand from there.
Well, Glenn, I'm sorry we're out of time, but I really enjoyed it. And thank you again for talking with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Michael. Always a pleasure.